From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. At the age of 13, Jana Jihad has had more experience as a journalist and war correspondent than most young journalism graduates. The Palestinian teenager has been reporting from the occupied West Bank since the age of 7, documenting the abuses of Israeli soldiers and settlers at great personal risk. The cousin of teen activist Ahed Tamimi, Jana has been touring the U.S. for several weeks now, speaking with congressional representatives and addressing packed audiences around the U.S. She now joins me on the program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for joining us. What has it been like? What have these past few weeks been like for you here in the United States, speaking to audiences of a country whose tax dollars has actively supported the occupation of your lands?
It's been pretty cool talking to people and trying to raise awareness about what's happening. As a Palestinian child living under the Israeli military occupation, trying to talk about how we as Palestinian children, how our rights are getting violated and everything. It's been pretty cool. And, you know, as you said, like your taxes are getting going to Israel and they're using it to kill and arrest and, you know, ill treat children. And that's why we're also trying to raise awareness about HR 2407, Betty McCollum's bill, No Way to Treat a Child. This legislation is basically trying to call to end the funding of the U.S. To just like arrest children and, you know, all of that in any country in the world, including Palestine.
Now, I understand that you were born in the United States. You're Palestinian American.
I was born in the United States, but I didn't live here. So, like, I lived only for, like, 3 months and then went back to Palestine.
I see. So you've spent the vast majority of your life as a Palestinian in Palestine.
Yeah, all of my life.
So tell me about what it was that led you to document the abuses around you as a journalist. And I mentioned you're Ahed Tamimi's cousin. So between the two of you, you've garnered a tremendous amount of attention to what Palestinians are going through, which is a remarkable achievement for essentially children. I mean, you guys are children doing the work that adults should be doing. Many adults are doing, but you're doing it quite effectively. So what led you to become a journalist?
So I started journalism when I was only 7 years old, when I realized that there were not enough journalists to cover things that happened in Nabi Saleh, specifically in Nabi Saleh and also in Palestine in general. Like when my friend Mustafa was killed, my uncle Rushdie was killed, a lot of things were happening in the world. Didn't know how we felt as Palestinian children living under this Israeli military occupation. How we're suffering every day, how our rights are getting violated, how we're getting injured, arrested, and killed. So I wanted to be the voice of those children and try to raise awareness about what's happening with us and how we're living under this Israeli military occupation.
I want to play for our audience a short video of you in your element in the West Bank confronting Israeli soldiers. There's a number of them, and there was a lot of video of you speaking in Arabic and English. We have the English part of it isolated.
From here, as you can see, those terrorists, people, humans with no humanity are coming to our land, trying to kill children and to make children get injured. From here, we're sending our message and saying that Palestine will be free.
Now, you showed very little fear there. What are those confrontations like for you? Because, of course, Israeli soldiers are not above physically harming or even arresting and imprisoning children your age.
So, of course, you know, I was scared there, but we control our fears and not let our fears control us, because if our fears controlled us, we're not going to live. And yeah, as you saw there, the Israeli occupation soldiers surrounded me and tried to stop me from reporting and try to also, you know, just not give me my freedom of speech while I was doing nothing wrong and while I was only trying to raise awareness about what's happening at the moment. So it basically shows how my right of freedom of speech as a journalist is getting violated. And yeah, it's pretty hard for me as a journalist to try to document whatever is happening.
What was it like when your cousin Ahed Tamimi was imprisoned for a length of time? She garnered a lot of attention to the fact that Israel imprisons children. But of course, she is also your cousin. So this must have been a very terrifying time.
Ahed is my cousin and my best friend, so it's been, you know, one of the hardest experiences in my life because, you know, Ahed is the one who would just, like, I'd always hang out with her. She'd pick me out of school. We'd just go all around the village. We'd just have sleepovers. We'd just do everything together. It was pretty hard for me to just, you know, lose her, and I couldn't communicate with her, visit her, talk to her at the moment. When she was in jail for 8 months just for trying to defend her house and her land, she was imprisoned for 8 months, and when she was only 16 years old, and Ahed is only one of hundreds of children who got arrested, and her case isn't even the hardest. So just looking at how we as Palestinian children are getting imprisoned and how we are getting, you know, during this arrest, we got subjected to a lot of stuff. Like, for example, one of them is interrogation, which we get subjected in it to physical violence, get out of it with like psychological and mental issues. We can be traumatized. We can get subjected to solitary confinement. We got long-term handcuffed, blindfolded. And in the Israeli military law, it says if you're only 12 years old and up, you can get arrested, interrogated, treated like a criminal. That's if you're only a Palestinian child. Unlike the Israeli children who get subjected to only like normal civilian courts. So we have a lot of children who are only 12 years old and even under 12 years old. Like 2 days ago, I read about a child who was was called for an interrogation, and he's only 5 years old. And, you know, this illegal law that a 12 years old child can get arrested is also getting broken. For example, last year, my cousin Samir got arrested when he was only 11 years old. So it's very traumatizing for us just to think about that in any moment we as Palestinian children can get arrested or killed or injured.
Now, the U.S. President Donald Trump has been a seemingly even greater friend to Israel than previous U.S. presidents. And during his tenure, we've seen greater impunity. We've seen the move of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. And we've seen also just this week, while 700 homes were approved, Palestinian homes were approved to be built in the West Bank, 6,000 settler homes were also approved, a nearly tenfold difference in the two. What has Trump's rule in the U.S. been like for residents of the West Bank?
It's been pretty bad because, you know, Trump is trying to show the world that he's playing the role of the mediator in this issue. But he's basically is the Israeli lawyer, and he's playing the role of the Israeli lawyer. They're like, you know, declaring Jerusalem the capital of Israel, moving the embassy and a lot of stuff. And it's been pretty bad for us as Palestinians because, for example, in the West Bank itself, we have 68% of the West Bank is illegal settlements. And it's pretty bad, and he's not doing anything about it. It's illegal internationally. And he's just supporting all of that, and he's standing up with the occupiers and with the people who are killing the children.
And Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has apparently authored a peace plan that he's going to be touting in Israel this week. And Trump has called that peace plan the deal of the century. Some of it is apparently referring to economic investment in Palestinian communities. Do you have any trust of Jared Kushner to come up with a peace plan for Israel and the Palestinians?
So first thing, the deal of the century, we as the Palestinian government, we didn't sign on it, and which means it won't even, you know, it's not a thing because it's basically, it says that we have to live in this area surrounded by Israeli occupation surrounding us and just not getting our freedom. And of course, we're against all of that, and we refuse for that deal to just go. And we don't trust Jared Kushner, because like, what? He's like super pro occupation and pro settlements and pro killing of children. So of course we would never trust anybody like that, and we won't agree on anything that would violate our rights as Palestinian.
Now, you mentioned that you have been here in the U.S., and among the things that you've been doing is meeting with members of Congress and their staff to address the bill that would curb the imprisonment of Palestinian children. Has the inclusion of some younger pro-Palestinian members of Congress made a difference? I'm talking specifically about Rashida Tlaib, who's of course a Palestinian American, the first Palestinian American member of Congress, and Ilhan Omar. Together, Ms. Omar and Ms. Tlaib are the first two Muslim American members of Congress, and the two of them have taken pretty strong stands in support of Palestinians.
Yeah, they're basically supporting human rights, and they're basically supporting equality to all the people around the world, including the Palestinians, which basically is right. And for the, 2 weeks ago, I've been in Washington meeting with some senators and representatives talking about trying to raise awareness about what's happening in Palestine, and also trying to talk about the H.R. 2407, Betty McCollum's bill. I interviewed Betty McCollum. I interviewed Rashida Tlaib. So it was pretty cool. And it was nice to raise awareness about what's happening. It's like Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, all of those people that are supporting human rights issue, like that are supporting human rights, that are anti-occupation, we're very proud of, and we look up to them.
Ilhan Omar, in particular, has been, condemned for speaking out for Palestinian rights, and denounced as anti-Semitic. There's also been a criminalization of boycott efforts here in the United States. The U.S. House of Representatives just passed, with support from both major parties, a bill that would affirm the right to not boycott, or, you know, that would criminalize the boycotting of Israel. Do you see a double standard? I mean, America's all about free speech, but we can't boycott Israel.
So, look, they're saying that Ilhan Omar is anti-Semitic, but she's basically anti-Zionist, not anti-Semitic. And for anyone who speaks for Palestine, even I was talked about that I'm anti-Semitic, but I'm not anti-Semitic. A lot of Jewish activists, they just say that they're anti-Semitic, but they are Jewish, and they won't be against themselves, but they are against the occupation, and they are against Zionism. They are against killing children. And religions any religion doesn't have to interfere with any political issue, with any killing, because religions are, Zionism is different than Judaism, because Judaism is just a religion. We're against Zionism. We're not against Judaism. So,
And how do you define Zionism?
So Zionism is basically Israel, or Israelis, or the killing of people, the Israelis who are killing people, who they are Zionists, and they are just they're pro-killing, pro-arresting, pro-settlements, pro-violation of rights. But it doesn't, if you're anti-Zionist, doesn't mean you're anti-Semitic, because there are a lot of Jewish people that are anti-Zionist. And of course BDS and boycotting is one of the very peaceful ways to resist, and it's supposed to be legal, because basically a lot of people before us used it. For example, the South Africans used it against apartheid. Here in America, it was used against racism, tens of years ago, and so it's very confusing to see a country that defines itself as a, you know, just outspeaking country that anybody can express themselves. And they're just basically criminalizing what are the most peaceful ways to resist an occupation.
I understand that one of the events that you spoke at here in the U.S. during your tour was with Mark Lamont Hill, who is a well-known Black activist, speaker, journalist, professor, who was fired as his CNN commentator after speaking up for Palestinian rights. How important is solidarity from folks like Mark Lamont Hill?
So it's very important. Mark Lamont Hill is someone that I am very proud of. And, you know, he's just so amazing that he stood up for us. He stood up for our rights as Palestinians, for our rights as children around the world, for, like, the rights of the Black children, the rights of the Palestinian children, like, et cetera. And, you know, it's really amazing to see people like him. And it's very important to have more folks like Mark Lamont Hill in our world. And, you know, we're trying to just tell the world that we just want to live in peace like any other person around the world. We have to hold Israel accountable for every single thing that is happening. We have to stand up for our rights and for everything. Because if you're against the killing of the Black children here in America, you have to be against the killing of any other child around this world, including the Palestinian children. If you're against the children in cages on the border, you have to be against the detaining and the arresting of the Palestinian children in Palestine.
So the while you've been on tour in the United States, have you been subjected to any opposition? Because it's, you know, being a Palestinian rights activist or speaking about Palestinian rights in the U.S. often invites attacks from pro-Zionist organizations and individuals. It's a very well-organized machine, unfortunately, here in the U.S., well-funded as well. Have you been attacked at all by people during your speaking tour?
When I had the meeting with Mark Lamont Hill in New York, we found some JDL people coming.
Jewish Defense League.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they came and wanted to stop us, and then we had to call the police for them to get out of there. And there were a couple of people. You know, a lot of some articles were written by Jihad Watch, and you know, a lot of anti-Muslim, anti-Palestine, and super like a pro-Zionist organizations and like stuff like that. So of course, and also on my page, I received, you know, some messages and stuff. So yeah.
Did you receive threats on your social media?
Of course, I always receive threats, especially, you know, for example, last year, I was, the Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs made a secret report about me saying that I'm the next threat on their country. And it was revealed by the Israeli News Channel 4. And after that, I, you know, got registered by the Palestinian, Journalist Syndicate. And after that, you know, because it was revealed, I got a lot of threatenings and intimidations by the Israeli community in the Israeli street. And after that, I also was interrogated while coming back from Jordan for 3 hours on the border while I was only 12 years old in 4 days. So, of course, I get a lot of threatenings and intimidations from people.
And I just want to mention to our audience that your U.S. tour is continuing, and you're going to be heading, you're right now in Oregon as you and I are speaking, you're going to be heading to Southern California, where our program is based, with a number of events happening Saturday, August 3rd at 2 p.m. in San Diego, Sunday, August 4th at the Arab American Community Center in Anaheim, and that's at 3 p.m., and Tuesday, August 6th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Los Angeles. And we'll post all of that information on our website for people interested in attending. What is your ultimate goal, Jana, as we wrap up our conversation? What is your ultimate goal being here in the United States? Obviously, as a journalist, you're doing the job of a journalist by interviewing people as well. But what would you like Americans to take from your events?
You know, I basically came here to speak about our rights as Palestinian children and how it's getting violated. Basically, like, to raise awareness about how we're living under this Israeli occupation, how our rights are being violated, how there are checkpoints in our way, and how our schools are getting raided. And I'm just trying to show what's happening and speak about it. And, of course, you as Americans can do a lot of stuff. For example, also, we had our initiative called Shamsan 3 years ago, which is basically a platform for the Palestinian children to raise their stories. And we interviewed about 300 child and made them draw something in, about their lives. One of them was Ahmed Dawabshi, which he was a 4 years old child at the time, and his whole family was burned alive while sleeping in their village, in their house, by a settler, and including his 18 months old brother. And he was the only, you know, survivor from like his family, and when he was only 4 years old, and it was pretty hard, and he drew a lot of stuff, and we were trying to just raise awareness about what's happening, about those children's stories, like, you know, about like what's happening in Palestine. So basically, you guys have to basically raise awareness about what's happening. You have to stand up and try to tell your government to hold Israel accountable of their, you know, just with the stuff that they're doing, and basically not, you know, not supporting Israel by your name, you guys, because you're basically paying taxes and your money is basically going and killing, getting used to detaining children and getting children getting injured and children getting killed and stuff. You guys have to stand up for your rights, and you guys have to, we all have to unite to make this world a world of peace, a world of love, a world of equality and justice, to liberate Palestine and to let every single child around this world live the childhood they deserve.
Jana, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I understand you are quite active, of course, on social media, especially with your journalism work. Can you give out your Twitter or Facebook or any other social media pages that people can follow what you do?
Of course, on my Facebook, it's just called Jana Jihad. So you guys can find my reports over there. I have a lot of, like, my reports are basically concentrated on my Facebook. My other pages, like Instagram, is like are more like personal, but it's like my reports, you can find them on Facebook on my page, or you can just Google my name on YouTube, on Google, whatever. So yeah,
facebook.com/Jana Jihad, J-I-H-A-D. We'll post a link to that as well as other social media pages and information about your upcoming events on our website, risingupwithsonali.com. Jana, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye.
My guest has been Jana Jihad, a 13-year-old Palestinian activist, journalist, and speaker currently on tour in the U.S. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.